from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier. Joining me via Skype, Rusty Fender.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Good to talk to you. Matt Henderson from our Williamsport Bureau is on assignment today. D.C. Taylor, of course, the chief editing officer, the CEO of the Bold Gold Radio Media Group. And he tells us, correct, D, that the end of Skyping may be in sight.
Yeah, we'll bring you guys back in next week. I think that I think we can make that happen. I'll come in a hazmat suit and you don't have to be exposed to me.
I'll bring extra newspapers because Bill DeRozier is almost housebroken. So I think we should be good in the studio once again next week. Right, yeah. Bill?
Well, I am looking forward to seeing your ugly mugs there again. But this is the Shale Gas News, a show dedicated to helping you understand why energy matters in our lives. And I would like to take a moment just to reflect on where we have come over the last couple of months with COVID and where we currently are with, widespread unrest across the country. And just remind everybody, even with all of this turmoil, even with the uncertainty surrounding our economy, one thing remains: we do live comfortable lives because of the energy we have and we enjoy every day. That energy is affordable, abundant, and accessible. The three A's, as I like to call it. And while we are, blessed with a time frame of the year where it's kind of transitioning between spring and summer, the weather is palatable, the fact that we have electricity to turn our lights on at night, the fact that we have plastic products that are made from oil and natural gas to help treat those sick in hospitals or those injured from rioting, or the fact that even with all the widespread destruction that has occurred in some of these areas, at the end of the day, we know we can rebuild. We know we have those products that we can make those things. Things can be replaced. So again, I just would like to reflect on the energy industry and its contributions to our economy, to our society, especially during this time of uncertainty, providing us some certainty knowing that we can still listen to this program. We can still use our cell phones to communicate one another. We can travel around. And with that being said, there's a lot of stuff going on in the energy industry. So here's a roundup of some of the more national stories. Shale oil production bouncing back with prices. This according to Bloomberg. Early signs of a shale rebound are becoming evident as crude prices emerge from their dramatic collapse earlier this year. EOG Resources Incorporated, America's largest shale-focused producer, plans to accelerate output in the second half after shutting in about a quarter of its crude production in May, exploration chief Ken Bodecker told RBC Capital Markets in a conference. That's an interesting development. Climate cases keep landing in state court, and why should that matter? According to E&E News, judges across the country have now determined that climate lawsuits against oil and gas companies belong in state courts. But while legal experts say that state judges may be more open to climate arguments lodged against U.S. states, countries, and cities, the municipalities still face multiple hurdles in their quest to force big oil to pay for sea level rise and other local impacts worsened by the continued use of fossil fuels. Of course, and we've discussed at length on this program, hosted many experts on it as well, the energy industry, especially in the United States, is leading the country in a reduction of emissions. In fact, even without being part of the Paris Accords, the United States is still a worldwide leader. And I have argued that the keep it in the ground movement, the full replacement of oil and natural gas with solar alternatives is not the way to go. And in fact, we should look at more ways to get affordable, abundant, accessible energy around the world, especially to developing countries, third world countries, where when they need heat, when they need to be able to cook something, they're relying on biofuel or wood or coal. And we can replace that with natural gas. Its reliability, its affordability would help further move those countries in line with what the United States and other developed worlds, countries across the world have already achieved. What are your thoughts, Rusty?
Yeah, absolutely, Bill. And again, there's so many different things going on, these days, too, as you mentioned, the pandemic, and it was business as usual for the gas industry. I mean, if this were the winter, rather than the spring and the summer. You know, things may have been a bit different, but I think, this is one of the few industries, as you well know, Bill, that continued on without the blink of an eye or without any type of disruption in service. And I think that has a lot to be said about the validity of this industry as one of the biggest driving forces in life right now, Bill.
And I couldn't agree with you more on that, Rusty. And, again, I look forward to getting back to some normalcy here over the summer. Still plenty of time for people to enjoy the summer and even the fall here and be responsible and move with the way society is moving, whether it be from social distancing or things like that we've learned from the COVID issue to what's going on in more of the social landscape. Now, here's an interesting story that caught my eye. This one coming from Bloomberg, Rusty. As we talk about oil rebounding, which we said it always would rebound, natural gas prices could go negatively on global oil supply, oversupply. The specter of negative prices is hanging over energy markets more than a month after oil's unforgettable crash below zero. While crude has staged a rapid recovery over the last few weeks, to curb, surpluses, basically as companies stopped producing and surpluses started coming back down, price started going back up. The $600 billion global gas market remains extraordinarily oversupplied. Traders and analysts say the worst may be yet to come as demand falls and storage nears capacity, creating the ideal conditions for negative prices in some parts of the world. Again, I emphasize some parts of the world. I think we're really focusing more on the LNG market, not domestic prices. Though keep in mind, some companies here are exporting globally and driving some of their revenues. So those companies may see some pain from this. But again, just much like oil, as supplies cut back, production cuts back, supplies come down, prices will come back into balance. So I think it's just part of the cyclical nature of this industry. Another story here, U.S. postpones more oil and gas lease sales, this according to oil price. After abruptly postponing a lease sale in New Mexico last month, the administration has postponed additional oil and gas leases in Nevada and Mississippi. The Bureau of Land Management's online auction website showed the BLM of the Department of Interior is postponing a lease of seven parcels covering 10,459 acres in Nevada, which was originally slated to take place. We don't really see that much in Pennsylvania here, Rusty. It's more so in the western part of the country or along the Gulf where the federal government owns the land and leases it off for oil and gas development or other natural resource development. So again, not really a Pennsylvania issue, but I think it's just indicative of how the industry is having to pull back. Companies aren't spending more money on leases right now. They're focusing on maintaining production or cutting back production they currently have. Again, I think it's a short-term thing. These leases are important to both the federal government and also the states that host them as they generate a ridiculous amount of revenue for social services, for education, highway infrastructure projects, things like that.
Now, you're right, Bill, and I couldn't agree more because, we live in the densest population, the most dense populated area, the Northeast Corridor between Boston and Washington, D.C., with the major cities here. But you go out west and, Utah and Colorado and New Mexico and, some of those areas which, started the shale revolution back in the 40s, especially in Colorado with all the shale out there. And, if you're on the interstate out there, it's 120 miles between towns. So, it's a whole different country when you get a couple of time zones west of here, Bill.
It certainly is. And you, as someone who spent a lot of time traveling this country, going to national parks and national monuments, you've probably experienced it more than a lot of people. And I don't think a lot of people realize just how much federal owned land there is around the country.
That's all you see is, you're right, Bill, one sign after another. This is a federal reservation. This is a federal site. It is amazing. I mean, I had to look a lot of this stuff up, but you're now entering the federal reservation, and it goes for hundreds and hundreds of miles. It is truly incredible. And it's a very romantic and very vast place, as they say, the American West, and the sky is the limit, to use an old adage on that deal. But the West is a whole different country from the rest of the country, Bill.
Certainly is. A couple more stories here before we get the Fender's Fast Facts. EPA moves against states to block pipeline blockades. Houston Chronicle reports the Environmental Protection Agency is moving ahead with regulatory shifts designed to limit the ability of states blocking natural gas pipeline projects in the name of climate change. And look no further than New York, New Jersey, Maryland. These states need more energy. They need these projects to be built. The federal government, FERC especially, has approved these projects to go forward. And how it works is the EPA works with states to enforce the EPA or federal regulations, and states are just choosing not to comply, basically blocking these projects to be built to slow down natural gas or fossil fuel usage. It hurts their consumers. It hurts the economies in this area. In New England, it forces them to find supplies from other parts of the world, in some instances from Russia, because that makes a lot of sense. So I'm delighted to see the EPA moving to reassert its authority and kind of moving these projects forward. Another story here is the next major market for U.S. LNG, somewhere that we don't think. I mean, a lot of times we talk about Asia as being the destination market for LNG, but the slowdown couldn't come at a worse time for the U.S. LNG industry, which has experienced explosive growth over the past decade, and new nations are looking for LNG. One that's popped up, Turkey, of all places in the Middle East or eastern part of the Mediterranean there region. Turkey is now importing U.S. LNG. And we've talked about U.S. LNG being a cause for good, a weapon in an economical war, if you want to go down that road. But it really could be used to help stabilize geopolitical issues around the world. And it appears that Turkey is a destination market now for LNG. I had no idea until I came across that story. But, you know, surprising, another area that keeps popping up and I think will be a large importer as more LNG capacity in the United States comes available. India. I think India is also another area that burns a lot of traditional fuel sources, coal and wood and biofuel. And I think they could consume or want to consume more and more LNG because it's clean burning. So I can't think of a better place for the United States to be, better position for the United States to be than in a position supplying LNG around the world. So again, while prices are at a 13-month low for LNG, I think the LNG market will stabilize here over the coming years and be a strength for the United States. Rusty, why don't we transition over to Fender's Fast Facts?
And thank you, Bill. And 35 years ago this week, one of the biggest advertising and marketing debacles in American history took place. It was the new Coca-Cola. We all remember that, 1985. It was released in some areas, the bigger cities, on April 23rd. It went into national distribution on June 10th, coming up this week. So a couple of fast facts about Coca-Cola. I think a lot of us know that Coca-Cola and Pepsi were invented by a pharmacist, John Pemberton, out of Atlanta, Georgia. He was critically wounded in the Confederate Army and was bedridden for about 6 months. He became a morphine addict, and he switched from morphine to cocaine to try and ease his pain. Coca-Cola, of course, as I mentioned, born in Jacob's Pharmacy, no longer exists, in the city of Atlanta, Georgia, on May 8, 1886. At first, Coca-Cola was marketed as a remedy for several ailments, including that of your libido. And again, it was a temperance drink, meaning it came out during Prohibition as well. It cured indigestion, headaches, depression, anxiety, and also drug addiction. That's pretty funny, being that it contained cocaine, but it was also served warm for the first 30 years. In 1903, cocaine was taken out of Coca-Cola. Now, for that 1 year, they were experimenting with different uses because the formulation changed. The next year, in 1904, they used instead of using fresh coca leaves, of which cocaine is derived, they used the spent coca leaves with just a trace amount of cocaine in it. Originally, it cost 5 cents a glass. As I said, it was served warm. This is interesting. Coca-Cola played a role in race relations. In 1899, Coca-Cola was the first beverage, cold beverage at the time, to be sold in bottles. Now, at that time, segregation, blacks were not allowed into soda fountains with white folks, where Coca-Cola was mixed up with seltzer water and the syrup. So by bringing it out in bottles, this in a small way helped improving race relations because all minorities could have Coca-Cola after 1899. And the advertising campaign of Coca-Cola, I think the world's biggest advertising Asia, the campaigns are either from Coca-Cola or McDonald's. Coca-Cola, its creative advertising back in the 1930s, it contributed to the public vision of this very famous, iconic figure in world history. Their concept of this figure, this person, changed the way America saw this person. You have any idea, Bill, who this iconic figure of advertising and the world's, just the world's prowess would be?
What was the year again?
In the 1930s.
1930s. Geez, I don't know. DC, do you have a guess?
I don't. For some reason, the first name that popped into my mind was Teddy Roosevelt. I don't know why. Well,
that's not Teddy's time.
I don't know, but yeah, that's probably 30 years off there.
Yeah, you were. 1903 is more like Teddy.
Right.
Okay. This is very difficult, especially it's very tough to word this without giving it away. But their advertising campaign, which won awards in 1934, made the iconic look of Santa Claus way it is today. Yeah. Yeah, people had different visions of Santa Claus. There was no beard. There was no bag for his sack for his toys. There were no black boots where the outfit came over. So their vision of Santa Claus is kind of like the norm for the next 80 years of how Santa Claus, that jolly red suited figure with the rosy cheeks and the white beard, looked. Very interesting.
No
Some
kidding.
Facts about Coca-Cola. Yeah.
Here I thought everybody knew like that image, that was the common image going back hundreds or thousands of years. But wow, that's a Coca-Cola advertising 90 years ago.
You would think, and they use that advertising campaign up until, I mean, they bring it back like every 8 or 9 years. It was so successful back then. They keep on bringing it back and back. And now even as Coca-Cola and a lot of products try to be a little more cool, you know, with the hip generation, they still use that in a lot of print ads. That's a pretty interesting fun fact this week, guys.
That's great.
All right. With that being said, we're going to take a quick break on the Shale Gas News. When we return, we'll be joined by a good friend of the program, a good friend of mine, Bill Kelly, Sr., founder, proprietor of BX3 Oil Field and Supply and Reynolds. And we look forward to having him on to discuss how his business is surviving these interesting times. But they're doing a great job and doing a great service to the community. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
How's business? This question from Brand Graphic Solutions, where they help grow your business with high-impact creative solutions. Brand Graphic Solutions, or BGS, can help your business get noticed. BGS provides equipment decals, job site signage, directional signage, even CNG decals. They service local, regional, and national brands. BGS also does vehicle wraps, which are really cool and eye-catching, by the way. Or call or visit online at brandgraphicsolutions.com. You want to succeed in business? Don't blend in. Stand out. You can thank me later.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Cabot Oil and Gas partners with the Weinberg Food Bank to battle food insecurity in Northeast PA.
It's the partnership of foundations and the companies like Cabot that really enable us to be successful.
Gene Brady, president of the Weinberg Food Bank.
We are very blessed. Those regions that have the presence of the gas industry in this area really enables us with things like Fill Glass with Hope, Hunter Share the Harvest, other donations that traditionally have been made to help food banks in their mission to end hunger in Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. It's my pleasure to host on this program someone I've known actually longer than I've worked at Cabot, longer than this show's been on the air, Bill Kelly Sr. He's the owner, operator, founder of BX3 Supply and Rental. And he and I were chatting earlier in the week, and he said, you got to let me back on the show. And I said, your suspension's up, so we can get you back on the show. Bill, thanks for joining the program.
Morning, Bill.
Hey, I'm sorry about that four-letter word. I didn't mean to use the word.
Well, Bill, you know, you and I were chatting about your company. You know, your company's been around since essentially the beginning of the Northeast Marcellus Shale development. Actually, before it, it's a family-run business. You, your son, we're the proprietors of it. Your family has been working on it. Why don't you remind our listeners what exactly BX3 Supply and Rental does? And then we can get into the fact that you guys are still going during COVID, during, you know, all the difficult times that we're seeing over this, you know, last year. And you guys are still going strong.
I appreciate that, Bill. Yeah, we started the company in 2005. We started our business plan and opened in 2006, the spring of 2006, as a rental store, with the desire to build three stores, one in Montrose, one in Tunkhannock, and one up in the Towanda area. As we got going, 2008, we did well 2006 and 7. In 2008, everybody stopped selling land. We couldn't figure out why until we learned from the world that the gas industry was coming to town. Everybody was holding onto their land. So we started getting to learn about that. My wife owned a bar up in Montrose, or South Montrose, Pennsylvania, where I got to meet most of the guys from the gas industry, for whatever reason. But anyway, we met a lot of great people. We started getting involved, and we started a distribution company called BX3 Distribution. From there, we grew very, very quickly. We opened up our store in Tunkhannock and forgot about the one in Towanda because we were so busy. Grew with the industry, grew as a local supplier. We're the only ones from the area that actually got involved in the distribution. There was a lot of companies that came in. There's a lot of companies that have supported and started because of this industry. Been wonderful for a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs. But anyway, we started it, we followed it up and down and got our hearts broken, made a lot of money and lost a lot of money. It's the same cycle that everyone goes through, but we're still standing and we're proud of that. So that's kind of the long and the short of it.
Well, it certainly is. And I know I'm a patron of the store, a supporter of the store. A couple of weeks ago, I had a run of chop saw and a floor sander from you guys. So you kind of do a little bit of everything. And I think that's part of the reason why I wanted to get you back on this show. Is I still come across people that don't understand that they can go into your store to rent supplies, rental equipment, even if they're just a homeowner, if they're a contractor, even though it says, you know, oil field supply, and so much of your business has been the oil and gas industry. It's really a store that can support any industry in the northern tier, and even in places like Clark Summit and Dallas aren't terribly far away from it either.
We do an awful lot with small contractors, and this is one of the reasons coronavirus hit us hard. We have a lot of landscapers. We have a lot of small excavators, construction companies. We have safety products that we've brought in. We have erosion control products for the real estate business and different things. And, yeah, we have tried to tailor our business to what our customers' needs are. And the gas industry has certainly been a part of it, but we have been involved with most of the local companies for quite a few years and trying to support their needs and do the right thing by them. We've been very blessed with great opportunities.
And I think you see that because you have customers, again, including myself. I can't think of a better endorsement than a true one, right? Just based on the customer service and your knowledge, expertise, your staff. I've become friends with many of them, and they've helped me through many different projects. So again, I encourage anyone looking for any type of project to reach out to you guys. But this brings us to the next thing you and I were chatting about. The industry goes through many different ebbs and flows. You know, we have up cycles, we have down cycles, we have different opportunities there. We also are faced with a pandemic. We're faced with, you know, a lot of uncertainty about the economy right now. But the biggest thing is your business is still there. You guys are open. You've adapted to the current times. You're providing great services to people. You know, tell us what it takes as a local run business as opposed to a big box store to be able to maneuver through the difficult times we're in and provide a service like you guys do. Again, at the end of the day, who's still standing? BX3 is still standing and doing such a great job in the community and the region.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of sleepless nights that anybody that owns your own business knows. You've got to have a strong passion. You've got to have a desire to service your customer. Doesn't matter what it is, what squidget they're looking for, what they need. We've got to try to come up with a source. We could call ourselves the relentless problem solvers, and we've survived because of that attitude. I've got wonderful people that work with me for years that know this business inside and out that will do. Well, we sold some plastic fence the other day. When one of my guys came up and told me, I just sold $1,200 worth of plastic fence. The customer couldn't find it anyplace else. Through our Orgill relationship, we were able to find it. We were able to get it for the customer and solve their problem. That's how we make our living, in rental, in distribution, and in customer service. And we've never varied from that. It's hard sometimes because, you know, things don't turn out like you want them to, but we've always believed in that. It's always kept us alive. And we're, you know, we've had some hard times. The coronavirus put us on our knees, but we've gotten through it thanks to some great banking relationships and bankers that believe in us, and thanks to my employees that have worked their ass, or I'm sorry, worked their butts off to help us get through it all. So we're very blessed with all those things.
Well, what's in store for BX3 now? I understand you guys are you know, refocusing the operations, and but for the most part, you know, you're committed to serving the customer needs. What do people listening to this need to know about BX3 going forward?
We are looking for opportunities. We have wonderful real estate down in Tunkhannock that when we were growing, when we were very large, we needed. Now the business has cut back such that, you know, we are looking for repurposing our property in Tunkhannock. We've been dealing with all kinds of crazy ideas. We don't want to stop our service. We don't want to change our motto, but we're trying to figure out the long term, the 6 months to 2 years from now. So we're in the midst of looking at all different types of opportunities. I'm really not ready to commit to what we're going to do right now yet until we see what the coronavirus, the other side of coronavirus, looks like a little bit, and to see where the industry goes and our small contractors go. But we're very anxious to go wherever the direction, wherever the opportunities are, wherever we can service our customers.
Well, I will take this opportunity, encourage folks, especially those maybe in the gas industry that are moving up to Northeast PA to, you know, perform some sort of service, some sort of business venture with the gas industry, to consider reaching out to you, because it's a beautiful property. It's centrally located to Bradford, Susquehanna, Wyoming, Sullivan counties. It's got highway access, and I know you guys have plenty of space there, and you're willing to work with just about anyone to meet their needs down there. So I just want to take that opportunity. If somebody was listening to this right now, how could they get in touch with you, Bill?
They can call me at 570-240-0282. If I don't call you right back, I will call you within 24 hours. And I'm anxious to talk to anyone that's got any kind of interest in how we can help each other. And of course, you know, we are on the websites, and we have the BX3 websites and different things that the young folks here are working on. So we're very accessible. Both parts, either stop at either one of our stores and ask for Bill Kelly Sr. We'll certainly get back in touch with you very quickly. And we're interested in sitting down and talking to anyone and trying to help solve and work together.
Certainly is. And for those interested in the website, bx3inc.com, I have it pulled up right now, easy to use website. And Bill Kelly, I want to thank you so much for coming on the program. And I look forward to, you know, continue working with you both in my personal exploits around my property as I try to be a landscaper or a carpenter from time to time, but also just as a stalwart of the community, not only from the business sense, but all you do for the community in Susquehanna and Wyoming counties. It's a pleasure working with you, and I consider you one of my closest friends in the energy industry. Thanks for coming on the program.
You're welcome, and send me a bill for those nice words. I hope I can afford
it. Well, thank you again, Bill. Guys, we're going to take a quick break here on the Shale Gas News. When we return, we'll have Carl Marrera, Vice President, Government Affairs for the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, on to discuss REGGIE, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a program that Governor Wolf is trying to join here on behalf of Pennsylvanians everywhere. It's something you should be aware of, and quite honestly, it's something you should be fearful of, as Pennsylvania gives away some of its sovereignty and possibly leads to more taxation and higher energy costs in the name of cleaner energy development and use. So look forward to that. So stay tuned for more from Carl Marrera after a word from our sponsors.
Do you know the power of America's energy security? Security that starts right here? The Marcellus Shale alone contains enough energy to meet our demand for the next 100 years. And that's just by today's estimates. If Pennsylvania were a country, it would be the fifth largest producer of natural gas in the world. All thanks to the incredible natural gas production right here in northeastern Pennsylvania. Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000, Montrose, 278-7368.
We've now been partnering for a couple of years with Cabot to provide what we call Fill a Glass with Hope. In this past year, we served hundreds of kids, and we provided nutritious milk in a quantity of 6,462 half gallons. We're grateful, as are the hundreds of children that are receiving the benefits of the program as a result of what Cabot and its partners do.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Governor Tom Wolf is proposing a carbon tax via executive order to enter Pennsylvania into the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, commonly referred to as REGI. This crushing proposal will undoubtedly cost thousands of, well, to steal a line from his own campaign, jobs that pay. PMA's Manufacturing Minute starts now.
And now for the Manufacturing Minute, produced by the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, exclusively for the Shell Gas News.
The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative establishes a regional cap on the amount of CO2 that power plants can emit by issuing a limited number of tradable CO2 allowances. These allowances have to be purchased by energy companies, acting as a tax on energy production. In late 2019, Governor Wolf authored an executive order to enter Pennsylvania into this multi-state accord to join states like Vermont, New Hampshire, and Connecticut without the consideration of the General Assembly. It is the position of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association that REGI is a flawed proposal and is not sound public policy for our Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Acting through executive order, Governor Wolf is pushing a carbon tax, a cap and trade program, a carbon credit, whatever you want to call it. It means this: energy producers that emit any kind of carbon will have to pay the government, and that cost will get passed on to you, to me, and to every other consumer of energy in our Commonwealth, which is, well, all of us. The issue at hand is whether or not a government program that will undoubtedly add substantial cost to Pennsylvania's electricity consumers is the best mechanism to achieve the cleanest, healthiest, and most sustainable environment possible. You'll find that the answer to this question is clearly that REGI does not accomplish this goal, but the program will negatively impact Pennsylvania's economy in a very punishing way. It's important to ensure that environmental regulation is evidence-based, reasonable, and within technological limits. It's likewise prudent that these regulations achieve real environmental benefits and do not advantage one sector of the economy to the detriment of another. REGI fails all of these bright line tests. Governor Wolf's proposed targeted emissions reduction of 26% by the year 2025 is well within striking distance today, some 5 years away. The private sector has led the way, doing what the private sector does best: inventing, innovating, and forging a better future for all of us. Energy-related CO2 emissions have decreased 22% from 2005 to 2016. These goals are being met without entering Pennsylvania into a regional accord that will thwart private sector innovation, forcing the layoffs of thousands of our Commonwealth workers, and putting our economy into a tailspin even further than it already is amidst this pandemic. Enacting REGI will have dire economic consequences, as has been proven by other REGI states. According to research published by David Stevenson by the Cato Institute, he says, and I quote, REGI allowance costs added to already high regional electric bills. The combined pricing impact resulted in a 12% drop in goods production and a 34% drop in the production of energy-intensive goods. Stevenson went on to say that during that same time, other non-REGI states increased their goods production by 20%, and power imports from other states increased from 8% to 17%. What's more ironic? Pennsylvania was a part of that increase in goods and power generation. Pennsylvania, over the past decade, has been the main supplier of energy for REGI states, all while our emissions were lowering at rates faster than theirs. If Pennsylvania enters REGI, not a single atom of carbon will be lessened because the power generation will just transfer further west to Ohio and West Virginia to be sold back to us for a higher price. We lose the jobs, we lose the power, and we all pay more for no environmental benefit. Remember Stevenson's point about the large drop in energy-intensive goods? He's talking about manufacturers. Manufacturers are highly intensive operations, no matter what we're making. We're taking raw materials to make them into finished goods, and energy is a large part of that process. For many manufacturers, energy costs are the largest cost output month to month. Adding additional costs will drive manufacturers out of Pennsylvania and make it exceedingly difficult to bring new firms in. All of us desire a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment. As a conservationist and sportsman myself, I care deeply about our environment, which is why I want this industrial activity to happen here in Pennsylvania than elsewhere in the world. We benefit from the jobs and the economic activity, but we also benefit from the fact that Pennsylvania has some of the strictest oversight in the world. I would rather that activity happen here, where companies are good stewards of the environment, than in Russia or Saudi Arabia, where environmental regulations are skirted, or China, where there are serious human rights violations and heavy, heavy pollution. But I do know this. By entering into REGI, industrial activity will be relocated, and who knows where it will go. Let's not prop up Russian, Chinese, or Middle Eastern manufacturing and energy leadership. Now more than ever, let's work with our industries to innovate, expand, and forge a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment, not overregulate our many vital industries out of existence. This is just part one of this PMA Manufacturing Minute series. As REGI is going through the regulatory process by the governor's own agencies, it's being rejected by independent boards and advisory committees. There will be much more to come on this in the next few weeks, including impacts outlined by lawmakers, school officials, local government executives, and union members. Stay tuned.
Thanks for letting us be a part of your Saturday morning, and we look forward to bringing you the Manufacturing Minute again in 2 weeks. For more information about the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, visit us at www.pamanufacturers.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Manufacturing Minute here on the Shale Gas News.
Welcome to the Energy Update, presented by the Institute for Energy Research for the week of June 1st, 2020. I'm Alex Stevens, and I'm joined by IER's Deputy Director of Public Policy, Jordan McGillis. Jordan, what do we have going on the website at IER this week?
Hi, Alex. We've got three new pieces of content that are worth discussing here. The first is a blog titled, Biden Will Revoke Keystone XL Pipeline Permit. You heard that correctly. If elected, Joe Biden has committed to rescinding President Trump's permit, allowing the Keystone XL pipeline to cross from Canada into the United States. This pipeline, of course, has been the subject of ongoing long-term legal battles. And though those do continue, the expectation that TransCanada, which is now called TC Energy, has is that in 2023, the pipeline will be operational. And what their estimates indicate is that this pipeline would enable about 10,000 Americans to find employment in the building and indirectly support about 42,000 jobs through the supplying of goods and services to the project and the project's workforce. Pipelines are something we talk about a lot at IER, and the flip side of declining a permit to a pipeline is that oil is going to get transported in some other way. And the other way that oil tends to be transported across North America, if not by pipeline, is by train. And we've seen an increase by a factor of 50 since 2008 in the transport of oil by rail. And of course, you know that that is just not as as tried and true, not as safe of a practice as pipeline transport. So we would love to see this pipeline come into operation. And the Democratic presidential candidate, Joe Biden, wants to see just the opposite. He'd like to bar that plan from going through. So we will keep a weather eye on this situation as the election draws near. And we hope that that pipeline indeed becomes operational in 2023. Second piece is titled, DOE Lab Finds Wind Output Plunges When Tax Credits End. And this is a finding by the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory. What they've discovered is that after the first 10 years of operation, wind turbines tend to experience an abrupt decline in performance as time goes on. And of course, that's the period after which the production tax credit is intended to expire. So there's an interesting incentive there for the durability of these projects. And it appears to be the case that once projects are no longer able to garner that tax credit of a couple of cents per kilowatt hour, we're seeing significant declines in their productivity. So just another indicator of how these perverse incentives are influencing our electricity markets. And as we consistently make the case here at IER, the production tax credit is a serious distortion in our electricity markets. The windy electricity generation industry is no longer an infant industry. It's been around for a good 20, 30 years in its current form. We need to allow those tax credits to expire and for the program to come to an end. And then lastly, we have a piece on June 2nd from policy associate Paige Lambermont on how utilities expense investments into cloud services. As it currently stands, most states have two different ways of treating investments in utilities' own servers for storing data versus if they want to use outside services, namely the cloud. And as it currently exists in most states, while utilities are able to consider investments in their own servers to be of a certain sort of expenditure, they're not able to treat expenditures toward cloud services in the same way. And so it's incentivizing these utilities to utilize their own servers, despite the fact that that's not their area of expertise, and security and the cutting edge of technology on server services is in the cloud. So what Ms. Lambermont proposes here is that we bring unification between the way that regulatory bodies treat these two different sorts of expenditures. And it seems that it could go either direction. It could be that we treat them all as investments or we treat them all as cost of doing business, but it does seem that they should be treated in the same way. So there's not a perverse incentive for the utilities to continue building their own servers and servicing them when they can probably get better and safer cloud services elsewhere.
Thank you, Jordan. Those articles and more work from IER staff can be found at our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. And the final thing I want to highlight for our listeners this week is this week's episode of the Plugged In podcast, where I sat down with IER's new senior economist, David Kreutzer, to discuss the new documentary produced by Michael Moore, Planet of the Humans. Here's a short clip from that episode. This new documentary, Planet of the Humans, it covers a lot of issues that you focus on in your career. So I thought just sort of getting our reactions to the film might be a good way to introduce you to IER's audience and just talk about a lot of the issues that we cover at IER.
This documentary was really amazing coming from the people that it came from. Michael Moore, famous radical documentarian, was the producer. And the director and co-producer was an ardent environmentalist. And, you know, what they come up with is that green energy is not that green, not that reliable. You know, maybe it's not the panacea that the green energy people make it out to be.
You know, my feelings about the film were sort of mixed, but I think one of the main things it gets right is just the fact that the political discussion around green energy has always sort of been it's been unbalanced, but then also it just has always overlooked the trade-offs and some of the things that are associated with renewable energy that, you know, often go overlooked. So the film, they cover sort of the intermittency issue, land use issues, went into sort of some of the issues with companies that claim to be using 100% renewable energy, how that isn't really up to isn't exactly what's going on there.
It's not legit.
Right.
It's not legit.
So,
people, you know, all these, you know, they talked about Apple, Tesla, and then they showed that, you know, these businesses and the factories were still connected to the grid because, you know, the problem with solar is nighttime. And, you know, when the sun goes down, clouds come out, you know, you don't get any energy from them. And I want to say I had very mixed feelings about the Planet of the Humans, in particular, their prescription for the solution to a problem that I think they've wildly exaggerated is depopulation. And that's, you know, it's just old Malthusian, you know, claptrap stuff. And so I think ultimately I really don't like their solution any better than the green people. But they did a good job not only showing the problems of green energy, but I think where they really ruffled feathers was showing the money in the green energy business. And, you know, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of money, you know, even just for the nonprofit, but there's plenty of profit in there as well.
The Plugged In podcast can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, or at IER's website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Thank you for listening. Until next week, I'm Alex Stevens.
Safe are natural gas pipelines.
Pipelines are the safest, most reliable way to move gas. In fact, you really can't move natural gas any other way. You can't get to a home. You can't get to a manufacturing facility without the use of a pipeline.
The amount of savings a customer is seeing is on average $2,000 a year. Think about that, $2,000 in savings.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat-eating needs.
Resist the understandable urge to drink their award-winning sauces straight from the bottle. Although if that's your thing, we won't judge. Greenlee's bold and spicy Pure Rebel Sauce, Ozark Hillbilly Sauce, and sweet and tangy premium finishing sauce. Handcrafted and homemade.
Yummy.
You can order the sauces online and drool over the menu, too. Greenlee'sBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Camp. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Cabot has been, you know, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson. I'm DC Taylor. It is it's time for the top five, and then we'll get to the job segment right after this. The top five stories of the week. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So once again, this week we have a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five last week is American energy dominance over already? Oil veteran says yes. David Blackman, a senior contributor to Forbes magazine website and 39-year veteran working for various oil companies, including Burlington Resources, Shell, and El Paso Corporation, is one of our favorite experts to read on matters relating to the oil patch. He's a strong ONG supporter. So when we spotted a recent Forbes article Blackman wrote titled "Why the Brief Era of American Energy Dominance is Over," that sure got our attention. The U.S. under President Trump has become energy dominant throughout the world. To be fair, we were working in that direction under Lord Obama, but things really took off after Trump assumed office. The U.S. produces more oil than Saudi Arabia, and we produce more natural gas than Russia. We are the world's number one producer of both commodities. We were on the cusp of becoming a net exporter for both oil and natural gas, producing and selling to other countries more than we use here at home. It is an astonishing turnaround that came solely because of the miracle of shale energy. We are energy dominant throughout the world because of shale. And yet, Blackman now says our energy dominance is likely over and done. Really? We offer a different view in this post, which you can read on MarcellusDrilling.com. Rusty?
Thank you, Dee. And the fourth is Peregrine Energy Partners buys more royalty rights in southwestern Pennsylvania and West Virginia. Now, Peregrine Energy Partners, headquartered in Dallas, Texas, continues a program to buy royalty rights in the Marcellus Utica. Now, in January 2019, we told you about Peregrine's purchase of rights from undisclosed sellers in southwestern Pennsylvania. Now, in March of this year, Peregrine purchased more rights in Fayette County, Pennsylvania. Yesterday, the company announced they've purchased yet another round of rights in Washington, Pennsylvania, and two counties in West Virginia. There are companies that purchase landowners or rights owners royalty payments, giving them a lump sum payment up front in return for signing over all future royalty payments to the company buying the rights. Now, Peregrine Energy Partners is one of those companies. Buying future royalty payments is not unlike companies that approach and pay lottery winners who receive payouts over a long period, for life or for a period of years, with the lottery winning selling his or her future payments for a single lump sum. Of course, by selling future royalty payments for money now, the landowner rights owner will typically accept far less than the otherwise would have received by continuing to get royalty checks over a period of time. But there are certain circumstances, terminal illness, payoff of debt, for example, when the landowner would rather have as much of their money as they can get right now. And so royalty purchasing companies exist to oblige.
Okay. The third most popular story over the past week. Production cutbacks take hold in Marcellus Utica, but not all areas. MDN recently told you that EQT, the largest natural gas producer in the country, has shut in roughly one third of its regular natural gas production through the end of June. Cabot Oil and Gas, another large producer, said during its first quarter update it would shut in some of its production in 2020 also. These cutbacks, along with cutbacks by either Marcellus Utica drillers, have had an immediate impact on production in the Marcellus Utica, but the impact is not the same throughout the entire region. The experts at RBN Energy recently wrote about the effect of nat gas production cutbacks in the Northeast. Of keen interest for us is an observation that the cutbacks have not been uniform across all of the subregions in the Marcellus Utica. RBN discussed where and how much cuts have taken effect throughout our region in this post on MarcellusDrilling.com. Rusty.
Number two, the PTT Global responds to indefinite hold on the Ohio cracker decision. Now, PTT Global Chemical, the huge Thailand-based petrochemical company looking to build a world-class ethane cracker plant in Belmont County, Ohio, has botched its messaging about when it will make a final investment decision about moving forward with the project. The latest FID was supposed to be now, by the end of June this year. Then the company said the pandemic would delay the FID without giving any kind of time frame. Now, we refused to refer to that as an indefinite delay. PTT disputes that characterization. The company issued an official announcement yesterday to respond to the claim by MDN and others that the FID is indefinite by saying their best estimate is for a final investment decision by the end of this year or in the first quarter of 2021. Good. We'll hold them to it. By the end of March 2021, we should have an FID for the project. No more delays, no more excuses. See?
All right, the number one most popular story on MDN over the past week. Weekly shale permits issued for Pennsylvania, West Virginia, but not Ohio. No sooner had we started producing weekly new shale permits issued reports than the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, ODNR, website experienced some sort of catastrophic failure. While portions of the site have now returned, they still do not have the database reconnected that delivers weekly updates for new permits. We decided we could not wait any longer on ODNR to get their act together. Below are weekly reports detailing the names and locations for each new permit issued in both Pennsylvania and West Virginia for the weeks of May 11th to the 15th and May 18th to the 22nd. There were 17 new permits issued in Pennsylvania for May 11th to the 15th and 11 new permits issued in Pennsylvania for May 18th to the 22nd. There were 3 permits issued in West Virginia for May 11th to the 15th and no new permits issued for May 18th to the 22nd in West Virginia. MDN produces these reports each week for now, minus details from Ohio. And those are the top 5 stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email. Just go to marcellusdrilling.com/email. And now it's time for the jobs segment, brought to you by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
Hey, thanks, DC Taylor. And a slew of new jobs now. You can tell the market is starting to open up, thankfully. In Pennsylvania, we'll begin energy aviation. Looking for an administrative and accounting assistant out of Montoursville. Gas field specialists, a hydrovac laborer, and an HSE technician out of Mansfield. UGI Utilities, an operations rep out of Archbold. JW Energy Company, a compressor service technician trainee that's based in Towanda. Shale Pro Energy Services, a well tender out of Butler. Exelon Corporation, a senior energy efficiency program manager headquartered in Philadelphia. And Montauk Energy, an operations technician based in Monroeville near Pittsburgh. Now in Ohio, Fortis Energy Services looking for a snubbing supervisor out of St. Clairsville, NAES Corporation, an auxiliary operator out of Middletown. Montauk Energy Holdings once again looking for a well field technician out of Amsterdam. Apex looking for a well field technician also out of Amsterdam. Area Energy Resources looking for an operations technician out of Grove City. Tate and Lyle, an EHS manager, that's environmental health and safety out of Dayton, Marathon Petroleum Corporation, an administrative assistant based in Findlay, and Energy Transfer Partners, an administrative assistant for their field operations out of Akron. Now in West Virginia, Dominion Energy looking for welders, that'd be flux core stick shielded metal arc out of Morgantown, Southwest Energy, a well site supervisor for drilling out of Jane Lou, Marathon Petroleum Corporation, a measurement technician out of West Union, Percheron LLC, looking for a senior environmental project manager for the entire state of West Virginia. TransCanada, an applications developer out of Charleston. Earth Res Group, looking for a mechanical engineer headquartered in Morgantown. Got a couple in the Empire State, New York. Kinder Morgan, an operations specialist opening headquartered in Clifton Springs. ProDrill ERS, a well technical assistant out of North Sea. Dominion Energy, a compressor station operator based in New Hartford, New York. Avangrid, looking for a distribution operator out of Binghamton. And National Fuel, a station operator out of Addison. And just saw the postings for the Lindy Corporation, the foundation for this show 7 years ago. The Lindy Corporation also looking for the usual construction folks for their gas line projects and their civil engineering projects, of course, excavator operators, welders, general labor, roustabouts. Check them out online at Lindeco, L-I-N-D-E-C-O, the Lindy Corporation, lindeco.com, out of Pittston Township. And we thank you all for listening here, as DC mentioned, to the Shale Gas News. Those jobs sponsored, of course, by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, we go to find your future. And your future is here with natural gas. We'll see you next week here, same time and same radio stations on our network of stations, Gem 104, and of course, WEJS 1600 AM and 104.1 FM in Williamsport. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thank you for listening to the Shale Gas News every week.